Welcome to the XM Podcast. Here is your host, mental health therapist, Matthew Kanabe.
I am very hard on myself, dealt with severe anxiety.
And it made me feel like a monster. I didn't have the energy to care.
There was just nothing more but to face what I had been running from.
I'm already an anxiety-filled mess.
It's just luck. Like, it just goes back to luck.
Well, so I took a new role here in January with Emerge. And the reason I tell you that is because in the transition, I asked to meet with each of my team members that I'd be working with individually off campus to get to know them a bit more personally outside of work. Everyone I met with was amazing and had incredible stories of God's love and transformation. With that being said, my guest today hit me right in the heart when he shared his journey, and I immediately thought of the XM podcast audience and how they would really connect with him. So I am so proud of him for coming on this podcast and being open and transparent with his testimony. Please welcome to the show, Devontae Latimer.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you for having me on the podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm 23 years old. I was born in Dayton, Ohio, mm-hmm. but I was raised in Decatur, Alabama. So I try to, every time I introduce myself like that, I try to include the walks of life I already been through, because sure. I can take pride in it, in a sense.
Yeah.
So fourth grade, all the way up until fourth grade, my grandmother had died, and my mom is a single mother with five kids. So she, when my grandmother died, she wanted to take that time and get closer to my grandfather in Decatur, Alabama. So I didn't want to go. We took a vote. But I was the younger brother. Nobody really listened to what I said. So,
So did you lose that vote?
I lost bad. Yeah. So we ended up going to Alabama, which ultimately was the best thing that ever happened to me far as transitioning. So we went there in the fourth grade. I hated it. I hated everything about it. I hated it. It was a different atmosphere. It's, for some odd reason, there's a lot of more bugs present in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So we go down there and a lot of more tornadoes and stuff. I just hated everything about it. It was just so out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Went down there. And
so did you have a pretty good experience in Dayton then?
I was so young, I didn't really get to comprehend a lot of things.
Yeah.
By the time I was in the fourth grade. And then by the time I left, I started comprehending and processing, like, what was things and how did I feel about things. So it was just like young. I didn't really comprehend it at that age. I really love Alabama because at that age, I really started processing like in the present. Again, like in Dayton, in Ohio, I didn't get to process a lot at that age. So I got there. Everything was good. We were my side of family that I never seen before, but they embraced us. It's a Southern hospitality is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good thing. My mom was a good mom. She was, but as she was a young mom, actually. So I just realized, I was talking to me and my brother, and me and him like to bounce off each other ideas and just, you know, having a person in your life that corrects you when you're wrong and pats you on your back when you're doing good. He's just one of those for me. So he kind of broke it down for me in a sense, like, my mom was 21 years old when she had, and she had already had five kids. So it's like just generations of broken homes, and you know, with my mom, and then there's me. But she did a good job, actually. She did a real good job. By the time I got to, we were just one of those group of kids that my mom was very strict on us. We couldn't come out the corner. We might have friends down the street playing. It looked so fun. We look on the porch, see her face. We just don't get the nod. And so I used to always ask myself, like why? Like, I wanted to, as a kid, you don't really know. You know, your parents, you got parents for a reason. They know more. They protect you from the things you don't know, even from yourself at times.
Yeah.
So as a kid, I used to be like, I wanted to go down there so bad. I wanted to go down there. And my mom used to always say, no. But it was a time where, at a young age, my mom was more prone to mental health. So one of the things I know she's been diagnosed with was schizophrenia. well, amongst a lot of things. But I didn't really start. I didn't see the signs as a kid because I'm a kid and I'm not really looking. And I, obviously, I'm not. I know it runs in our family, but when you don't ever see none, you don't know.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I processed it over the years on like what kind of triggered the things on my mom to even go through episodes like that. So when I was roughly around 12 years old, she had her first episode. So I think I was around, I should have been going into the sixth grade. Sixth grade, we can't play football. In the South, you can't play football for the team, the school team. And I never played for a school team. But I know I wanted to play football. So my seventh grade year came along, and my mom, that sixth grade year, she had her first episode.
What did that look like?
It was such a traumatizing thing. It was the first thing for me of trauma that I could identify.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a scary thing. I just broke this concept down in my head like last month. When you're going through trauma, I realized that Miss Dr. Barrett, mm-hmm. she, and for those that don't know who Dr. Barrett is, she's a real established clinician here at Emerge. She's
for sure.
A great person.
It's wonderful.
And prayers for her. Mm-hmm. She's recovering from surgery.
Yeah.
I asked her, like, we was going over a concept one time, and she was telling me, like, I like to ask her questions because she can look at somebody and break it down what they're going through or can similar diagnose them in a sense or kind of bring the, like, what is that looking like? So, and I asked her about something, why do I do this? And she explained it to me. And with that information, I realized that the thing about trauma is it's two things you can do when you're faced with it, when you experience it. You can either become the victim or you can find a way to overcome it. But the thing with overcoming it is a lot of people like myself, we bury it. We bury it to keep going because a lot of times, especially in my neighborhood that I grew up in my environment, we don't really have a time. We don't have a lot of time to process things because so much coming at us. It's so much influence and coming at us in that type of environment where I'm from. You it's seen as a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something you like. It's people and things, environments you got to be around every day, all day. You don't want to show a sign of weakness in those type of environments because then you get taken advantage of fully. Yeah. So the first time I seen that, I think I was maybe in the sixth grade. So the first signs that I seen was my mom, but it was so crazy because me and you talk about now, I'm forced to sit here and really process a little bit, which is great. I didn't see it because I'm focused on other things. But my mom start getting behind on the bills. And it's not that she didn't have the money to pay it. It's just her being a mom that she didn't finish school. I think she got pregnant with her first kid in the ninth grade. So I think she dropped out, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So all she really knew was the basics of counting money and paying her bills. So she was always good at being surviving. So with that being said, she never really had a problem from my knowledge of paying bills. We always stayed in the nicest houses. She always kept us in the nicest clothes. So one day I stopped and start seeing like more bills and bills piling up. And then one day, it was one specific day where the landlord came in and he told us basically like, we have to go. I was present for this conversation. Things start going downhill after that, just downhill. But that episode wasn't so severe. It was just a sign of my mama just giving up on life, like no responsibilities. So that wasn't so severe. We ended up bouncing back from that, unfortunately, because it was a house that my grandfather owned, like literally right next door to his house that we stayed in and got my mom some help. So we ended up getting her some help. I think she went to the hospital on her own. For the first time, she went to the hospital. The second time, it was like momentary, like not that long after. I don't know what triggered it, but it was, I think it's like one of the hardest things to do once you, if you don't have the proper help, it's so easy. It's with anything though. It's easy to slip back into certain things that you're trying to recover from. So the one memorable time I remember was when the first, I think it was the first time she went into the mental hospital. My mom was all I knew. I came down there with my three brothers and my one sister. So that's all we knew. And my mom, like, it wasn't too many stable men in that position. And if it was, my mama, she kind of self-sabotaged those relationships with the good man. And not that she was conscious of that, because, again, she came from a broken home and et cetera. So I remember the first time they took us to visit my mom. My mom been in there. This is the first time I ever been away from my mom.
Who were you staying with?
I was staying with my grandfather. My grandfather is from Courtland, Alabama.
Okay.
And if you've never been to Courtland, Alabama, and this is not a take any shots at Courtland, Alabama, it's more of the more countryside of Alabama.
Okay.
Especially his generation, it was way more countryer. So he was kind of like a hippie in a sense.
Okay.
So he always had like a gigantic bus outside his house. It was like a school bus. He used to sell snacks and stuff over there. And then as I got older in my teens, he bought him a mobile home. And he never stayed in his house. He stayed in a mobile home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was like real hippie. Mm-hmm. So we staying with him. At the time, I was very young. And the first time, my mom was in there for like 3 months. It's the first time I ever been away from my mom.
Did you have a concept of what was going on?
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
This is like one of the first time I really started processing like pain, because in a sense, this is all I know. And like, you know,
for sure.
This is a person I love. I grew up with, like, I've always been with my mom. So, yeah, I started grasping that concept, and it was very painful. It was very painful. And as a kid, I'm seeing this and I can't do anything. I think that's what I remember. Like, I can't help my mom. I'm just helpless. Like, what's happening to me, I have no control over it. But I had an older brother, Kendall. His name was Kendall Rucker. He was older, and he was the only type of male figure I seen, which he didn't have any male figures that he learned from. So he just pieced it together as he could. And that's the thing about broken homes and generations, that ends up, it's easy to recycle that type of broken home.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I seen him do a lot of, I seen him things I wouldn't be too fond of. As a man, I'm like seeing me today in him, which I don't judge him, because I know what type of person he is, and I know he didn't have it figured out. I know he didn't have the proper guidance, and he didn't process like I process. It's just a whole lot of things going on there. So with that, the first time we went to go, they took us to go see. Basically, what I'm saying is my brother kind of always, one of the things I took from him was the way he responded to certain things. And it might not have been, I'm not too fond of how he responded.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time my grandfather took us to see her, I remember, I don't know why I was the first one, being the baby boy, but I'm like the first one walking into the doors.
Wow.
And they, it's like double doors in the cafeteria. I guess when you have visitations, they set people in there so they can have that visitation. It's a huge cafeteria. And we open the door and I see my mom pacing back and forth and like chewing her nails in a nervous manner. And it was just like tunnel vision. When the doors open, she seen me, and we just locked eyes, and just tears poured, and it was very traumatizing. It was very traumatizing. But when I look back at the story and how everything played out, it's a beautiful thing. Because mm-hmm. just going through stuff like that, it's just kind of, it's heavy. It's heavy, especially when you can't do anything. So she got out that time. After that time, we was angry. After that visit, I was so angry. I don't know who I was angry at. I think I was more angry at my grandfather and my uncle, because I felt as if it was a plan to get some type of money from my mom, because my mom had a lot of money when it came to us, because she got a lot of like government assistance, et cetera, things like that for us. Mm-hmm. So she had a lot of money to take care of us. And then the family in Alabama, my family wasn't poor. Like we was poor in a sense. Mm-hmm. So my mom was like the cash cow in our eyes, and in some people's eyes. So
that's trying to take advantage.
Yeah,
of
that. or that's the illusion that we were sold as kids.
Yeah.
So I was angry after that visit. I was so angry. I was so angry at my grandfather. I was so angry at my uncle, because I felt like it was planned, which was not the case. That wasn't the case at all, actually. So she got out, though. She ended up getting out. And the thing that I don't agree, I really disagree with mental health, because I watch it every day. I watch it still to this day. I watch my mom. She's never been the same mom, because she's in that field. They heavily seduce those patients. Obviously, it's a chemical imbalance, but it's like...
Yeah, from medication, yeah. She's sedated.
Mm-hmm. So she's
And you feel like she's still like that to this day?
Yeah, she never really recovered because she... But then again, that trauma could do that to you, like her life. But that going... So she get out. She had a lot of checks saved up that my older brother, he had to grow up early because of that. He had to grow up early because... He felt like he was the big brother. And that's when I'm going back to the, you either become a victim or you do something to take charge and prevent this from happening or something happen to you again. Mm-hmm. That's usually the outcome that people choose. So my brother just jumped into the fire in a sense. So he just felt like, because he was the big brother and his mentality, he felt as if everything landed on him. So my mom's car, he took that. He was only like roughly 14, 15. Wow. He took the car basically where nobody else could drive until my mom would get out. He took all her checks, all the checks that kept coming while she was in there for those months, and just saved them until she got out. She got out. She probably had roughly maybe $6,000, $6,000 to $5,000 saved up. And that's a lot compared to like the people like we grew up around in our family, et cetera. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So she got out. It was good. It was like my mom got out. Oh my gosh, I'm excited. I think I came home from school one day. It was just a happy thing. My mom is finally out. Things can go back to normal. But the thing about, again, growing up in broken homes, it's always, there's so many voids that's created. And a lot of people, even myself, we have these voids that we are very subconscious of.
Mm-hmm.
They got to feed on something. We naturally got to feed those voids, even if we don't even know we're doing it. So for my mom, she grew up in a broken home, which one of the things that she didn't feel was love from her father, I would say for her father, even from her mother. So I processed this. So the first love she felt was from a boy, a man of mm-hmm. her peer. Whichever that was for her, whatever form that took. So my mom, her biggest downfall was when my mom was involved with a partner, she puts that person first over all her responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
That person comes first. When my mom didn't have a man, her kids was everything. Like, greatest mother. And so I watched my mom... choose over us a lot of times. Specifically, I think I consciously put myself in a position where I wanted my mom to choose. So with that being said, as soon as she got out of the hospital, she met a guy. Second day she met a guy. And instead of focusing, putting all her attention on back to things. She did, but she did it with a guy on the side of her. So, but this is, now it is summertime. She got out roughly around summertime. Now football finna start. I really don't got no clothes. I really don't got no shoes. But I got to play football. The middle school coach, he want me to play. He's been on me since I came in. So, trials, first day of trials. I miss tryouts the first day because when she got out, she took all of us and went and rented a hotel for a week or two because we didn't have nowhere to stay. We couldn't stay with my granddad because my uncle stayed there and it was only limited rooms. So she went to rent a hotel. She rented two rooms. All the kids stayed in one room, and then, you know, she had her separate room. So we stand outside of our known area. We nowhere near anything. We kids. We can't do anything. I end up telling my mom, drilling her head, I need to make these tryouts. And she's like, okay, not really. And I'm conscious of not putting too much pressure on my mama because she's back. Like, she's back present, and I just got traumatized based off of because I knew sure. She couldn't handle it. So, again, I don't have no shoes. So I think the second time came around, the second day of practice, because I had an itinerary sheet the days, and I told her I need to make this one. And I came in. I was late. I came in at the end of the second practice. And I was so angry with my mom. I was so angry because I didn't want anything else in life at that moment for myself, but that I needed that. Football runs in my family on my dad's side. My cousin, Cody Latimer, he played in the NFL for a couple of years. He played with Odell.
Yeah.
He played with both of the Eli, the Manny brothers.
Yeah.
He played for Denver.
I remember him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it runs in my family. And as I got older, I always wanted to, because I got the potential to do it, I wanted to be next. I wanted to be the next one to do it. Mm-hmm. So I was so drilled in my head, like, and then it was an escape, not me understanding that it was an escape until I got in it, but it was an escape and I needed it. And I think God used that football and my sports vehicle to take my mind and keep me between those two worlds of my environment from where I grew up. So I just naturally was drawn to it. The good thing is when I came to practice that late, the coach was very so fond of me when I brought my mom up there. And he was a hard, like, that his reputation in the school was like one chance guy. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know how that would pertain to me because I don't know how he truly felt about me. But he had high expectations for me. So started playing football. I ended up playing. He let me slide. So I ended up playing. And naturally having the talent, on the seventh grade, I played with the eighth graders. I don't even know how to read a playbook. I don't even know how to know plays or nothing. I'm just naturally gifted. Mm-hmm. So, and you got kids that have been playing Pop Warner, so they advance, et cetera. So they running circles around me, but I'm running circles too, but not the correct. I'm cutting through the middle.
Right.
So, football. That's my getaway. I didn't play seventh grade, eighth grade year. I'm like, this is for me. Mm-hmm. I also played other sports, but I'm like, this is football. This is for me. And the more I played it, the more I was like, it fit perfect. What drove me, what kept me, but between my seventh grade and eighth grade year, talk about being torn between two worlds. Growing up in my environment, it's not a lot of male figures in that environment. So it's just your peers. And if we don't, I think as a kid, I think especially as a young man, we want praise. We want that. Mm. We want that pat on the back. We want that, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's like a attaboy.
Yeah, we want that. I don't know why, but at that age, we really want that.
Sure.
So I had guys in my community that I looked up to before me. They played football in high school. They was older, but they was the same thing. They was heavily influenced because it wasn't that many male figures in that. I think out of all my people that are friends I grew up with, it was only one male dad in that out of like 12.
Wow.
There's only one male dad. But see, even with that, his dad wasn't the ideal, and nobody's perfect.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
He seen his dad do some things that he wasn't too fond of, and he put him in the victim role or the overcomer role. So he had a father, but it was like, how much could I? So with that, you got a group of kids, some older, some young. You got a group of kids in the neighborhood, and it's easy in that neighborhood to get your hands on weapons. It's easy in that neighborhood. It's glorified, actually. It's very glorified. We call it stripes,
mm-hmm.
Earning your stripes. So whether that's fighting, getting a reputation to be a good fighter, breaking in houses, or even shooting at people. At that time, at that age, nobody glorified taking nobody's life.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't glorify that because nobody was that. That's the thing about kids. Like, we know right from wrong, but the thing is, you need that father figure in your life for that correction.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I've learned over my years, which is a good thing and a bad thing, but it's bad for the people that I had, that experienced it, that I've loved and grew up with. You get one chance. Sometimes it takes one time.
That's it.
It just take one time, and it could have been a great mistake. And you want to be a better person. Now, you knew it was a mistake, but unfortunately, we live in a world that, you know, is judgmental.
Yeah.
So I watch a lot of guys throw their life away with one decision.
Yeah.
So with that being the case, I went to jail. The first time I went to jail was in the eighth grade. I went to jail in the eighth grade. I just played that seventh grade season. Didn't know what I was doing, nothing. But I'm the eighth grade year. I know the plays now. This is gonna be my year. I went to jail in the eighth grade because my mom had another episode. This time it was worse. It was very worse. When my mom got out the first time, we moved into a two-bedroom house. My mom got five kids. She moved in a two-bedroom house. So my oldest brother, Kendall, he's roughly 17 at the time, 16, 17. Unfortunately for him, he had got a girl pregnant at the age of 16. So he also dabbled in drugs as far as distributing them.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big name in the city at a young age, a reputation. With that being the case, he had to make something happen. He already grew up too early, so he had to make something happen for it, because he's sleeping on the couch, then everybody else sleeping in the room, all the rest of us sleeping in the room. So it's like, you're expecting, you got a child coming in this world, you gotta fend for that. So what he did was, he ended up moving out, which was another thing that triggered my mom so heavy. And I never really processed that until a couple of years ago. Because my mom, that's the thing about love. When you get it, and you get it from a form of not a healthy form, it's no boundaries. So you don't know how to dissect certain things. You don't know how to let it go. You don't know how to let it, you don't, like, prosper. So my mom, seeing that, she couldn't process her first child. This is her first child. Somebody like her, in her eyes, is her first love. My mom, the first real thing that she could say is hers.
Mm-hmm.
And she, now she's at the time where she's watching that leave the nest.
Yeah.
And she didn't take that well at all. And then she just had another mental breakdown. She wasn't taking her medicines. I seen her do some of the most crazy things. She cut her hair off, just like in the middle of the day, scissors. She burnt all of our baby. My mom was very, like, a great mom. She had a lot of moments of us, picture frames, etc. Burnt all of that. Burnt all our birth certificates. Just a lot of things. So,
wow, that must have been scary.
Yeah. So I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and my mom did, like, it let all the lights cut off in the house. No heat, no water, no nothing. And where my room used to sit, you could look diagonal straight out of my room where my bed was sitting at. You could see straight out the front door. And we had a screen front door. You could tell when everybody coming in and out. So I hear my mom 2-3 o'clock in the morning yelling to the top of her lungs, just screaming, having episodes. And the thing about schizophrenia is, if anybody ever sit in front of one of those people that experience that, they have real conversations, and then almost like they have conversations with other things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if you process, it's like it's not from this world, like it's characters, and it's a whole different world. And it's a traumatizing thing. And it's nice that I'm roughly 13, and my mom was a heavy setter woman at the time compared to me, a malnourished, mm-hmm. you know, a malnourished kid, and trying to, don't know what to do from a mental standpoint and a physical standpoint. Because even if I get her back in the house, what's stopping her from going back outside? So I watch a lot of episodes. And then as a fear of a kid that young, the neighborhood, people talking about it, because, I mean, it's vivid.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, in the neighborhood, and everybody knew us, because that's the thing about the South. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
So as a kid in fear of other people calling children's services on us because of this situation, because people talk about it. We had a lot of people in the community that spoke on it, like, how is your mom? But it was looting to other things, like, how is she? Like, yeah, I see her. How is it going down there? Like,
yeah.
So we try to avoid those type of interactions at all times, because
you were fearful that somebody would take you.
Somebody would split us up because of that. Because at the moment, it probably would have been a great thing that we did get split up. But as a kid, we don't want to be separated, and then we don't know.
Yeah.
We just hear the stories of children's service splitting brothers and sisters up, sending them all the way over here, like out of reach, and we don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to jail one night. We used to steal out a lot of stores as a kid, but this is how young I was stealing. This is how that community is so influenced. One, stealing was one of the, like, it's the start before breaking into people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody did it. All the kids did it, to all the way up to 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds. Everybody did it. Specifically, we always had a crowd around our house because we was one of the most popular peoples in the city, whether it was because of me and my brothers or it's because my older cousins. And then we had the basketball rim outside the house. We used to shoot around. We all used to box as well. So everybody used to go to the boxing gym. So we had a bag full of gloves. It was a lot of the aggression and the energy that a young teen had. We had the right mindset, but it's easy to get off track when there's no guidance.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to jail one night because me and my brothers, we walked like maybe 15 miles to the big Walmart and just go steal.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'd walk all the way back home. So that's another 15 miles. So we just stole from this Walmart the last night. But you open the refrigerator, there's nothing in there. Family's poor, so it's like they don't got it. And then some family don't help you out because what they got is enough for them. And if they split with you, they ain't going to have it. So family wasn't family in a sense. And I get the whole thing about behind that, but it's like we kids. So what does it do? In my head, okay, I am hungry, and what do I know how to do? I can go steal. So I told my cousin one time, like, hey, we finna go to the other Walmart and steal, get some food and stuff, the snacks or whatever. We weren't even thinking food, like steal ground beef, chicken, none of that. I'm so young, I'm thinking steal candy. Steal candy.
Right.
So my cousin, like, I don't think we should go tonight. And I'm like, oh, you scary. You don't want to go because you're scared. He like, we've been going. We done went multiple times this week. We should just chill out. I'm like, we don't have nothing to eat in there. And then he was like, man, I don't know. Like, you ain't giving me no solutions, but you're telling me not to go.
Mm-hmm.
So he said it like, I got a bad feeling tonight. So we did, though. I still went. He didn't go. We went. We got the stuff. But the thing, we stayed in there too long, and we went in. We kids, we looked like kids. We went in and ended up, we got the stuff. We excited. We walking down the alley one day, and we see a police car swing behind us. And we were like walking through a storage unit, a storage unit. It's open gated, though. We walk up between a storage unit. So we can't see the car on the other side of the storage unit, but we can hear the engine speeding up. Once we hear the engine speeding up, me and this other guy ran, because we already kind of know, like, all right, they coming for us. Everybody else didn't run. The police started chasing me and him. So I'm running right behind him, just following him, because this is my first time running from the police. Mm-hmm. And I end up losing him. But the car, the cruiser was so close to me, it almost hit me, like ran me over. So anyway, end up, long story short with that, I end up going to jail for that. I end up going to jail. But because I was a minor, it's only so much they can do for you, to you.
Right.
So ended up going at night. Now, my mom's still having mental spasms. So she, in my mind, I already know, like, I'm finna, whatever they finna give me, I'm finna have to get it. Like, whether it was boot camp or whatever, I'm finna have to take this, because I know my mom's not even in a mental capacity to hold a conversation. So they told us that night after they arrested us, if your parents don't come get y'all, we're going to send y'all to this boot camp until y'all court date or whatever. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Because I know, like y'all need to call y'all parents. But I'm like, my parent ain't a parent right now. So I think I called my brother. My brother at the time, he already moved out. He ended up taking my mom on the truck because she's not capable of to drive it anyway. So my brother ended up coming to get us, but my mom still had to be there. But with my mom being there, I was always scared, because if a person of authority is talking to my mama, they see that she's not capable. Like, what is having? Like, it goes left. The conversation goes left, it's like to a whole nother world.
Totally.
And if they pick up on that, we're as good as gone. So, some by God, by the grace of God, they let us go. End up letting us go. But my thing was, the next day, it was going to be Friday or Thursday. I had a football game that next day, and I'm the eighth grade starter. Like, that's when I start thinking, like, I can't do both. Obviously, as I got older, I still did other things. But then that was one of a pivotal moment for me when it came to that lifestyle. A lot of kids wasn't that driven as I was coming out that community.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most heartless stories that I had was growing up with a kid. He was so talented. Like, he was finna go pro in boxing at 18. He's been boxing since he was 8 years old. He was so talented. He was a physical specimen. He was like, when we went to everybody in the neighborhood started boxing because of him, which is another thing that kept us out of that environment doing things like that. So he was so talented. When we all used to hit the bags, it was like a bags lined up in there, and everybody got a bag. He's always at the end, but he don't work out with us. Like, we might be over here and coach call out combinations. We throwing him at the bag. He's so advanced, he's down there by himself. And the thing about boxing, it's not about the age group. It's the weight class. So he can fight grown men and beat them that's been boxing as long. That's how good he was. So the thing was, it was also like a karate gym next to it. So, but this is how gifted he was. When he started hitting the bag, everything in the gym stopped just to watch this man. Mm-hmm. And he was only like 15 years old. But with us, we had two different crowds or groups with us that hung around my house. I had the older kids, which was my cousins, and they group. They hung around us. And we had our group. He was part of our group. But he was so respected because he was like, this is a star in our neighborhood. He's the most gifted. We didn't never seen nothing like this. So everybody praised him for just being so good in your lane, the lane that you in. Like, you're great. You're destined. So everybody from the older kids to the younger kids praised him. But he was so caught up in the older kids, the things they did, because it was levels to it. We did bad stuff, but the older kids did bad stuff. They might have already been shooting guns and breaking their houses and stuff. But they get, in the neighborhood, you get a reputation. And that's the reputation people thrive off of. Don't mess with that guy. He's real business. He, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's not, as I got older, it's not what I wanted. Because I seen him try to impress the older guys. So ultimately, a gang formed around my house. Now, these are kids. These kids, they harmless kids, but it's a gang formed around my house, which became rivals with another gang in the neighborhood. And that's when the guns start getting picked up and et cetera. But nobody wanted to kill each other. It was more of a scare tactics. Like, the first time I ever been shot at was a scare tactic.
Jeez.
Because we could have easily died. It was like they had us dead in the scope multiple times, everybody out there. They wasn't trying to kill us. They was trying to scare us. So that's the thing. Like, people had guns, but that's the thing about mistakes. That, like, you can't come back from things like that.
No.
But we not, because we kids and we grew up in that type of environment and not enough male figures in there, that's not drilled in our head as a kid, that letting us know, like, our choices is one of the most vital things that we have to be conscious of. And with that being the case, like I said, everybody looked up to this guy, and he was like 14. And you got guys that's in a group that's 19, 20, all the way down to the 17-year-olds that got a name in the neighborhood, and everybody looked up to him. So he was the type of guy, instead of getting his hands dirty, he could send somebody to go get his hands dirty, to handle his business, because that's how much popularity he had in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But instead, he wanted to put in his own work, is what they call it. And I didn't think he knew how much range he had. Mm-hmm. I don't think he knew how many people respected him just for being him.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being the case, a lot of the older guys that hung around us and my cousins and them, they start going to jail. This is when everybody start getting long times. Everybody go to jail, but they get out maybe a year, et cetera. But these now people are getting longer time sentences now. So we not seeing them. We not seeing them no more. So it's like, all right. So it's not any type of structure now. It's just now. Then next up is our younger generation. We getting older and nobody there critique us. So what we do, we start slowly like breaking up into our own groups. And with that being the case, he stopped going to the gym more, the boxing gym, because he wanted to, he got to thrive off of everybody praising him. It was a man in the gym named Coach Mario. Coach Mario was like a father figure to everybody, especially to Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
He was his coach. But Coach Mario was going through something at the time with his life situation, which prohibited him from showing up to the gym all the time. And with that being the case, this is the only father figure Cortez ever knew. So if he looking at him like, my dream flowed through you because you believe. And if you believe, I believe. And you are the one that's supposed to take me this far. Because again, he was 15. He had like 3 more years before he went pro.
Mm-hmm.
But right around that time, Coach started going through his stuff. So with that being the case, he like, all right, you not showing up at the gym. There's no need for me to show up at the gym. You're not taking it serious. So it's like, but and that's the thing. We search for consistency. I think that's a natural thing. Like, we want consistency in our life. So we consistent, his brothers, his friends that he's always around. So he just hang out with us more. And if he ain't going to the gym no more for real, we not going to the gym no more. Because it's like, like you was the light.
Yeah.
And with that being the case, we start breaking up. And when all the older kids start going to jail, and we all just start splitting up. Obviously, me and my brothers, we lived together, so we stayed in that area. But everybody else started breaking into their own groups in the city. And he ended up going one night. And this was the crazy thing. I mentioned this to you. And one of the things, we used to go to church. My grandma was the Sunday school teacher. And for some odd reason, like, we was good kids. But so my grandma, if I'm going to church and my brother's going to church and my cousin's going to church, then everybody, all the gang members, we all going to church too. Mm-hmm. Because that's where everybody's at. We still kids. So everybody, the baddest kids, the people that's deemed bad kids or whatever, you see them in that church on Wednesday night, every night, because we all meet up. Even if we go to separate schools, we all meet up, and it's just a good time. It's like one of the places, it's Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember one night, me, Cortez, and everybody else people in jail, some people in jail, some people, Cortez, he doing his own thing. We ain't hear from Cortez in like a month. And he's usually over there every day. And we like, we leave church one day and my grandmother was like, y'all, everybody, because when we leave church, it'd probably be like 9 o'clock, but we stay out longer than that when we go home. So my grandma dropped us off on the church bus. Before she dropped us off, she like, everybody needs to go in the house and don't come out. It's a curfew. They put a curfew on the city of Decatur because of what's finna transpire. So we keep hearing like, it's somebody just got murdered. And that's almost unheard of in Decatur, Alabama at the time. It's not too many homicides in Decatur at the time. So it's like, hey, somebody just died and there's a lot of robberies going on. It's 3-4 robberies took place in the city. Y'all need to make sure y'all go in the house and don't, like, it's a curfew. Y'all don't be out. You know what I'm saying? So, but the thing about us, I was so involved in two different worlds. I had enough reputation, whether it was from my brother and my cousins, like nobody really wanted to take it there with me in our side of the family. Mm-hmm. So it was like I was cool with everybody. Like everybody knew me. One, they knew me because I was real good in sports. Then they knew me because I was in between both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't think nothing of it. I'm like, it sends a panic through the city. The whole city of Decatur sends a panic. The next day I go to school, you hear the teachers talking about it. Hey, be careful, y'all, nobody stay out late. Nobody knows who it is. They went on a robbery and killing spree. I think they killed 2 or 3 people, and then they robbed in 3 different counties, multiple people. Now, at the end of the week, I didn't know who it was. Nobody knew who it was. Nobody knew who the people was. But I knew when the names came out of who it was, I would know exactly who the people was.
Sure.
Because it's so small. Everybody know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The list came out. I remember walking, I think it was like a Saturday morning. I was walking to my mom's house and somebody called or texted me like, hey, I just sent you an article. Look at that. And I looked at it and I read the name. So I'm like, okay, I know him. Dang. They finally caught the guys. I'm like, dang. And it was, he stood out like a nail in the wall. Like, what are you doing with this crowd? Like, we all been around people that has like tremendous talent or just real popular, and they could be, they just so cocky and they know it, and they not really too pretty good people to be around. Like, yeah, you have a great talent or you're so destined, but the way you handle it is not humble at all, and it's like such a ick to be around.
Mm-hmm.
He was so gifted and talented. You wouldn't even know he was that gifted and talented because he was such a humble kid. He had a high voice. Mm-hmm. He didn't look like he. Mm-hmm. It was just, and I seen him with them, and that's the first time I ever lost, not just a friend or a brother. He was the light.
Mm-hmm.
He was the light that, like, he gonna be the first person that make it out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we seen him in that, and I seen him. It crushed me. It crushed me so bad. Like, it hurt. That was like one of the biggest pains I ever experienced.
Wow.
And it was so sad because it was like he'd never see the day of light again. Because, like,
so he went to prison.
His story is so sad.
Mm.
He went to prison. He was not that kid. Like, he was not that kid at all.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do none of the killing. It was two older brothers, Joseph Cohen and Cedric Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric, I knew him when I was a 6th grader. He was an 8th grader. He was the first person I ever seen that was finna fight a teacher. He was just one of those people you knew he wasn't.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I expect that out of him. I didn't know his brother, but his reputation precedes his actions. And then the other guy was just a getaway driver, and I guess he was just there for the robberies, Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing about that case is, it don't matter if you pulled the trigger or not. I mean, you good as did if you were in the same. So he got so many. He was never going to see the daylight again.
Oh, that's so sad.
So he went in when he was 15. He died last year in prison at the age of 23, OD'd off of fentanyl.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man.
I hear stories about him. I ask people, like, how was Cortez when he was in jail? Like, what was his demeanor like? And they say he used to walk around all the time with his head down. And the thing about me is I like to really, I never knew what it was, but I kind of qualify as discernment. I feel everything. And I just put myself in a lot of people's shoes when they going through stuff. And I put myself in the shoes. I can only imagine the emotional, internal pain he had to endure to know that you were so, you let a lot of people down. He did. He let a lot of people down. So it was like, I don't know. It's so many stories I could tell.
Yeah.
But that's like that's the first one that changed everybody's life. All the kids that was like growing up.
Yeah.
And then some people it got worse. It's a cycle. It's a cycle. You keep going to jail and doing the same thing. If you don't take that out when you got a chance, you end up.
Let me ask you then: how did your journey head after that? what happened to you, and how did you get out of that life?
So my journey after that was like, so at the time I'm going into, I think when he went to jail, I was coming into a freshman, my freshman year. He went to jail as a sophomore. He just became a sophomore. I was going to go into my freshman year of college. I mean, high school.
High school, yeah.
So everything changed though. It wasn't the same. Everybody, cause this is the first time like, this is the first time things get real. Like, he's the first one, and to be the first one, you're the biggest one. Like, you're the most positive person that people know, and you just did the, like, you involved with this, so it crushed a lot of people, especially me. So now I'm like, I'm going into my freshman year. I'm not staying with my mom. My mom's got better, but she's on the medicine. So my mom kind of, we never all got back under the same roof after that. After middle school. So my mom ended up kicking me out the summer of my eighth grade year. She kicked me out the house. It was over something petty. But that right there, I had this thing for my mom where it was like, even though I was doing bad things in the neighborhood, I felt like I was still playing that victim role. Like, you were still my mom. You supposed to do this. You supposed to do that. You supposed to do this. And she just... Then subconsciously, she didn't want no part of it, in a sense. That's what her action showed. Like, she still loved me and everything and still provided meals for me at times. But she didn't step back up into that role. And I kind of resented her for it, and I kind of tried to force it on her. And that reality that came with that, I wasn't ready to get. So that crushed me. So I ended up staying with my uncle. It wasn't no better. It wasn't no better. It was me and my brother, Trayvon. My brother Trayvon. So me and my brother Trayvon was like a year and a half apart. So things started changing then because I'm like, I still got football. So despite everything that's going around, things that I'm experiencing people dying back to back, people going to jail back to back, just family internal things that's bad, a reality that no kid should ever have to accept. I still got football. So I'm like, okay. I got a name for myself. I played the last 2 years. I only played 2 years. Going into my I'm going into my ninth grade year, and my name in the city is starting to ring bells to the high school coaches. And that's what every kid dreams of. We had a kid named Asa Martin. He played at the other school, but he was like a phenom in North Alabama. So he was eighth grade. He was bigger than everybody, et cetera. And Austin High School is two high schools in Decatur, Alabama. It's Austin and Decatur. And at the time, Asa was being heavily targeted by the high school. And as a kid, you like, that's what you want. You like, oh, as soon as you go as a freshman, you're going to play varsity. And he was the first one to do that. So I was like, that was my whole process. He was my rabbit. I was chasing him. So that's what my whole mindset was set on. So despite everything going on, I'm like, okay, I got to create my lane now. I've got to focus on this. I stopped putting the neighborhood drama behind me, the stealing, the breaking the houses, the all that, the gang related things. I put that behind me Because I'm like, I got to choose. And I naturally chose this because it's getting more better. So for me, I I still was submerged in it because everybody around me was doing it. I focused on ball. I knew that was my ticket. Mm-hmm. I knew it was if I wanted to get out of there, I knew that was going to be what's mm-hmm. going to take me out of there. So I took it serious. I took it very serious. I played football, basketball, ran track, and I boxed. So I had to put a couple of those down. Like, it was
it's a lot.
It's a lot. Mm-hmm. So I did football, basketball, and track. I put the boxing down for a little bit because boxing is actually one of the hardest sports to be trained in.
Mm-hmm.
So football come around. I know football, but I can't get a lot of food, like, because the people around me, they don't got a lot of money, so the food was kind of scarce.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't gain a proper weight, and I was just skinny and just strong and just natural. But I was skinny still. I had enough weight. I was like 165, roughly 165. I ended up playing football, high school. My whole goal was to make varsity as a freshman, come in, make an impact. I did. I made varsity the last two games of the season. I could have made it in the beginning of the season, but my freshman class was good. I'm not gonna lie. We was good. We went mm-hmm. almost undefeated. But it was a guy that was in my same grade. His name was Jackson Hall. He was an old lineman. He was like three. He was already bigger than everybody in middle school. He was 350-some pounds, 6'3", big tank.
Wow.
And so as soon as he came in, he went straight to varsity. So I'm like, I'm as good as him, or if not better. But two different positions, but, you know, mm-hmm. it works out different once you get in the politicals of it.
For sure.
So that was my goal. I know Asa now. Asa's a sophomore because Asa was a year before me. So Asa is on varsity. He tearing it up. I'm a freshman. Watching Asa, because we shared a field, watching him tear the whole North Alabama up. So he sophomore, ran for like 1,000-some yards. He getting offers already. He's my rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
We got the same type of build. We run the same. So I'm like, that's my rabbit. I need to get on varsity. That was my goal. I need to get on varsity ASAP. So I'm focused the whole year. I didn't get to play the last two games, honestly. I got moved up football the last two games. But the basketball coach got mad because he wanted me to come over and develop my game, because the transition in between the two is, if you're not, you know, I mean, it's talent and then it's God-given talent. Mm-hmm. Some things just effortless. I did have to work on my game in football. I mean, basketball. Mm-hmm. So like, I was a lefty, so I had to work on that right.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, the transition was always bad for me. I had to put in a lot of work because one, I didn't have the body type. I had to build that body type back up. I couldn't keep the weight between both of them. So I go to basketball, work on that. But once I came back to football, when spring ball started, I had guys that I was already naturally talented, then work their butt off that whole offseason and become as strong as me, as fast as me. And I'm like, oh. So I'm just focused all around on sports. I'm trying to, this is my ticket. So my freshman year, I was very comparison. I compare myself a lot. Not that I didn't feel like somebody was better than me, but I'm like, what is he doing that I'm not doing? Why is mm-hmm. he getting the success he getting and I'm not? I stay up late nights. I'm early mornings. I watch guys go out and drink and party, smoke, do everything you're not supposed to do. And you always told when you're doing anything, especially with people become for you, they tell you the blueprint, what you should and you should not do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do it religiously and you don't get the results you think you deserve, it's so discouraging.
Yeah.
And we had a guy on our team named Josh Marsh, well-off guy, his family, great family. They own a church in Decatur, Alabama, called Epic. Great family. But this is how I took it so serious. I ended up being on a leadership board. We had a leadership little board for Decatur. And that's a good accomplishment for somebody like me mm-hmm. because it shows, not only does it show my peers, not only did my peers respect me like that, the coaches respected me like that as a young pup.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, I get the, I'm a part of something that, like contributes to the team. So, and they, and your peers vote you into that role. So that was the first time I ever, like, my work showed for the work I put in. So I was very, it was a very good step for me. I knew I was going in the right direction. But the guy named Josh Marsh, he was big. He was a big guy, linebacker. He was the linebacker. He was already, he played as a freshman. He was a big guy. Like, he was fit. He was like a phenom. So he was our star at Decatur. Then Asa was a star at Austin. So Josh Marsh, he already played. I'm coming in as a sophomore. Now I'm starting already. And another thing that showed my work as a coming in as a freshman was the coach. I never talked to the coach, but this coach, Coach Adcock, he was such a feared coach. He came up to me. I never had a conversation with him. He was just such a fear coach, respectable fear coach. And he came up to me, and I had a nickname. You get a nickname in Alabama, you're doing something good. So my nickname was D-Lat, and I'm in the cafeteria. The head coach came up to me. He was like, D-Lat, come here. I came up to him. We talking. He was like, what number you on next year? I'm like, number one. Number one? I mean, obviously, you get a low-digit number, they really think highly of you. And he looked at me and smirked. And there's other guys that have been playing, that's got a well-established name before me, that have been playing years at Decatur before me. He gave it to me. And I'm like, now this is a kid that's coming from poverty. I'm coming from all the bad things in the neighborhood. This is the first positive thing for myself that I've...
That's good.
And it came with a lot of confidence, basically. It came with a lot of confidence. And from there, I took off. Had a great year that year. But I still was poor. I still had things at home that I got to constantly battle with. And it's... So it came a time when my dad wasn't close, but we always stayed in contact when I left Dayton. And I always kept him up to date with things or whatever. And I told him, like, I kind of need to get out of here. And... I'm moving around. But basically,
that's all right.
I told him I need to get out of here. This is between my freshman and sophomore year. And I'm like, okay. So he made it happen for me. And my freshman year of summer, I was supposed to play ball in Dayton, Ohio after my freshman year. And so I didn't, though. I end up, why would I go back to a place? I'm in Dayton. I'm stable. I'm the only child, so... I got food, consistent food source. I'm in a better position and a better foundation where I can focus on what I really want to do, which is go to college and play football. But I get down there and I get homesick. It's my first time ever getting away.
Right.
I get homesick. And at the time I had a girlfriend, so it was like, but me and her was in a rocky position. But still, this is my first time being away from my foundation that I knew. And my dad excited. I'm there. He's just excited he ever been. And I told him at the end of summer, like, I need to go back. And it crushed him. I didn't really process how detrimental it was to him. I just know I'm homesick. I know I don't want to be here. So I ended up going back. I went back to Decatur. And then by my third month there, I'm starving again. I'm on the football team. I'm finna play varsity. I got the number one. Everybody got high expectations for me. But I'm starving. I'm still in the same position. I'm still plagued with people around me doing things. It's easy to get back caught up in it. But I stayed on track. I got so much love, in a sense, from what I was putting into football that it kept me sustained. So... I get older, and then Alabama football is good in Alabama. It's the atmosphere. So after the games, I don't got to go back home. I got a friend that stays on the other side of town that's nice. He's the quarterback. He's a linebacker. So his family loves me. I can go over there. I don't have to go home. So a lot of my sophomore year was football, and I was around a lot of friends that took my mind off that. But at the end of the day, that's still a reality that I got to go back to. So after that, I kind of just took the opportunity, and I prayed. I prayed all the time. I prayed all the time about just my situation. And then God, He really took me out of that position. He gave me another opportunity where I could take that. So after that, that year, great year. But another thing was an influence was the guy I was telling you about, the linebacker, Josh Marsh. My locker is next to this guy. He's the bar. Because he's the one the college coaches come in and see. 6'3", like he looked like a college player already. Mm-hmm. So when we working out in our groups, I'm working out with him. Because I'm as good as him. Mm-hmm. But he's the eye candy. So now, in my mind, I'm proving something. I got something to prove. Not to just you, but him and everybody else that ever thought it. And with that being the case, I had a great year. Had a great year that year. I wanted to play both sides of the ball. They limited me to one. I was very angry. But I took the opportunity and just ran with it. Made the best out of my situation. Had a great year. It's another guy on the other side of town at Austin. He's getting offers. He's in the same grade as me. We play the same positions. He's getting offers because Asa starting to get offers. And Asa is pushing him. Mm-hmm. So Asa ended up going to IMG Academy. And if for those who don't know what IMG Academy is, it's the biggest high school you can go to in college. IMG. Oh my gosh. If you go to IMG, you're prone to be like top 10 in the nation after you finish a season there just alone, because they play politically every good team in the country. So they always like top 5 in the country. IMG, they like a mini college. Mm-hmm. They got all the best equipment, everything, all the best coaches, etc. So Asa end up leaving. He gets a chance to go play at IMG Academy. I don't even know about IMG Academy until he goes there. So I'm like, oh my gosh. Now my rabbit just got a little faster. Mm-hmm. but this is my sophomore year. So Asa goes to Florida and play IMG. But the other guy across town, Reddy Stewart, which is he on his way to the draft this year. I hope he get that opportunity.
Yeah.
He's starting to pick up the pace, the back from Asa leaving, because he was a corner. Me and him same size. I was a little more athletic, but he was good. He was good. He's been good since middle school. We played each other all the way since middle school. So he's starting to pick up offers at the end of that season. My season was better than his. My season was probably the best in North Alabama that sophomore year. But I ain't getting no offers. Mm-hmm. And then so spring ball and like the summer workout starting, and even before like the season was ending, me and Josh Marsh locker was next to each other, literally. And every time I come in, it's letters. It's a lot of letters by this man locker. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm watching him and it's like, I'm starstruck, because it's like, that's beautiful. That's good for you. Which he deserved it. He definitely deserved it. But I'm like, I'm thinking I'm going to get some of his momentum, because I put up the numbers. Didn't get nothing. Didn't get nothing the whole year. And then the summer came around. You got college coaches coming in to see him. And I felt like the coach didn't sell me. But the coach loved me. The coach was, like, real big on me.
What do you think was happening that you weren't getting that attention?
I don't know. I still can't wrap my mind around it. Mm. I just knew at the time he wasn't selling me. And, I wasn't a troublemaker. I didn't get in trouble at school or nothing like that. The persona he seen was a great persona. It was nothing negative he ever seen out of me. Mm-hmm. But I just wasn't getting sold, and that was everything for me. Especially like this is the one thing I have can separate me, to get me, to change my life. Cause I pray. When I pray, I ask God to let me be the light in my family. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always prayed that since I was sleeping on the couch at my uncle's house. I've always prayed for that. And that's one thing about prayer. Sometimes we ask for things, but we don't know what we really asking for in the depths. Sure. I didn't learn that until I got older, because I am the light of my family. But when we pray for something, we got an idea in our head when we don't have that. Like, it's a maturity in our head when it comes to this, like, a prayer, God, and our relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And I had it in my head what I wanted to be the light is. But when I look back at what God has done for me, he's answered my prayers 3 times over.
Yeah.
And he's still not done. So I knew I had to leave, though, because I was like, I know I wasn't being sold. And all of the coaches loved me. They didn't want me to leave. They practically begged me to stay, in a sense. Try to help my discomfort, because I wanted to play both sides of the ball. They didn't let me do that my sophomore year. Going into my junior year, they like, hey, we're going to let you play running back. We're going to let you play both sides. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, but at this time, it's like, now it's more of a, it's for me now. Like, I grew up with the guys that I play ball with, grew up with them. I'm like, we grew up together. So I didn't want to leave them. I didn't want to leave them. But it was like, if I don't go now, this door gonna close.
To Dayton?
Dayton. Yeah. And if I don't leave now, like, this door gonna close. And the one thing I've seen a lot in my neighborhood was, sometimes you go to the gym, play basketball, you see older people that's a little older than you. And I'm getting older now, so I'm seeing grown men in there playing, might be shooting around in there. We running pickup games. And you just see some of the talent in there. And I had conversations with some guys like, hey, man, why you didn't run track or something, dude? You fast. And you always hear the stories on why and what happened and what got them. And I made a promise to myself that I never wanted to be that person that be like, it didn't happen for me because of this. Mm-hmm. Like, if I got the talent, I need to utilize that. If I got any, and that's what anything, it's not just the talent, it's just anything that God gives you with. Yeah. You need to utilize. Don't be the person that say, I wish, or like, I just didn't, that it was such a discomfort for me. Because you see that and you like, that's heartbreaking, because the environment wouldn't be an environment if it wasn't for people like, if you took your opportunity, because then you would be another person, so another role that somebody can look up to.
Yeah.
So I seen that all the time. It was just a discomfort. And I was like, I promised myself, I'm not going to be that person that be in the gym playing basketball and they ask me, man, why you didn't go play ball?
Right.
Why, like, or why you didn't go do this? Whether it was ball, serving the Lord, etc. Why didn't you take advantage of that?
Yeah. So as we kind of work towards, you know, wrapping, what are some points that you would want our listeners to know, and how is your family doing today?
So some points I would want the main listener to know is, if you have something that God has gifted you with, whether it was physically, mentally, or even spiritually, sometimes it, and if you got a goal, basically you could, it might be a goal, it might be a dream. If you're going through anything, you gotta, and for the younger generation, you use that as a vehicle. God gave you that for a reason. Whether he gonna allow you to take full advantage of it, or whether he gonna allow you to use it as a vehicle to get you from point A to B. I think God gives us things and we need to use those as vehicles.
That's good.
My family doing good right now, as in the whole spectrum of constantly. It was almost like we couldn't dodge a bad time. So unfortunately, my brother Kendall, he's facing waiting on trial right now for two capital murders, unfortunately. So he's been in there since my junior year of high school.
Wow.
I got another brother named Vernon. He just kind of piecing it together, trying to figure it out. My brother Trayvon, which I was closest to, which I stayed with when I was with my uncle, the one that was like a year apart from me. We went to the same high school, so he was always like a year apart from each other. So when I was a sophomore, he was a junior. He died, unfortunately, my freshman year of college, from an enlarged heart. He died in 2019. My younger sister, she's a mother of two. She got two twins, and she got pregnant at the age of 15. So she dropped out of school also, but she went back to get her GED, and she got some aspirations and goals I hope she accomplished. And then my mom, she just joined, because she do a lot of babysitting, basically, like,
right,
with the twin boys. So she's just flowing right now. Yeah. She's trying to piece it back together slowly, real slow. But for the most part, that's how everything is right now. For me, I'm finna be the first generational graduate of my immediate family. So coming up in May for my undergrad. And then I'm going to go back and get my master's.
Look at you.
Social work.
Yeah.
Football-wise, I still got 1 year eligibility left. I don't think I'm going to use it. I think I've been praying about it since I had to put the ball down a little bit. I've been praying about it. God has been quiet. I guess he just let me kind of get my emotions together with it. But I think he's telling me to put it down. Mm-hmm. I think he want me to get more and more stable. Because it's been a dream. It's been a goal. That's been my vehicle that's been driving me for so long.
It's good.
So,
well, dude, I got to tell you, I appreciate you sharing your story, but I am super proud of you. You know, with all the things that you've just shared, and I know there's probably 4,000 other stories that you could share in all of that. Getting to know you in the little bit of time that I have, it's incredible the man that you've turned into, and the paths that you could have gone down. I mean, you very easily could be in prison. You very easily could be dead.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's amazing to me what God's done in your life, and I'm super thankful that you're a part of our team here at Emerge, and I'm super thankful that you've been able to turn away from a lot of that stuff that you've seen destroy people's lives, and it really is amazing to me. And dude, I just appreciate you sharing your story today.
Yes, I appreciate you for letting me share, and that's somebody else. I hope it does. I hope it resonates with somebody and they can really see that you don't have to. It's a way out.
Yeah.
Even when it don't look like it, it's a way out. Just keep praying.
Well, thank you, brother.
Yes, sir.
How encouraging is Devante's story? We all have adversity and trials in our life, and we can choose to become bitter, resentful, and retreat. Or we can lean in and be shaped by God and overcome the hurdles life gives us, and then share our stories like Devante did today and make an impact in the world. I love stories that show God is working even when we think he might have forgotten about us. He's right there. Well, thank you for listening, and please share and like, make comments on this podcast. It really helps us spread the word. Well, until next time, or when our Savior comes, God bless.